All right, guys, I'm really excited for you to hear this conversation with Sean Collins and Joel Ellenwood. As you know, I am a libertarian. I'm a big advocate of free speech, and I really hate censorship. On this episode of the Protestant Libertarian Podcast, there are going to be a couple of words, not many, but a couple of words that you might not normally hear on the show, words that you might not want your children to hear if you were listening to this when you were in the car. So I'm just giving you a warning up front that there is going to be some language that you don't usually hear on the Protestant Libertarian Podcast. No big deal. Not a big fan of censorship, and I don't think any of you that listen to this show on a regular basis will be offended. I just wanted to let those of you that will listen to this show with children in the car know that this episode, and this episode only, has some language that is not normally on the show. Just a little disclaimer up front. Again, we don't believe in censorship, so I'm not going to go through and beep all of it out and all of that kind of stuff. I think you're going to appreciate this conversation. It's pretty incredible. Just wanted to let you know. So without any further wasting of your time, let's go ahead and get into the show. This is the Protestant Libertarian Podcast, a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute and part of the Christians for Liberty Network. I really hope that you guys enjoy today's show. All right, guys, welcome to another episode of the Protestant Libertarian Podcast. My guests today are the great Sean Collins, the man behind the excellent podcast Buds in Reality, and Joel Ellenwood, a.k.a. Infinite Zeal Syndicate, who might just be the greatest libertarian meme maker of our generation. Sean started hashtag Liberty Book Club on Twitter, where people share important books on libertarianism. We're going to talk about a few of those books today, as well as the future of U.S. politics. Gentlemen, welcome to the Protestant Libertarian Podcast.
Yo!
How you doing? Thanks for having us.
Oh, man, I've been looking forward to this for a long time. I joined Twitter in, June of 2022, and you two were some of the earliest people to follow me. Your stuff is great out there, so I've been looking forward to this. The first question I got to ask both of you, though, is just a little bit about your backgrounds. I know that a lot of people that follow me on Twitter and listen to the show probably know who you are, but just tell me a little bit about yourself and what you guys do. And I guess we'll go ahead and start, Sean, since I was on your show just a couple weeks ago. I'll give you the honor of starting us off today.
Oh man, where do you want me to start? I mean, there's a whole biography that comes involved. So like, where would you like me to start? Like, do you want me to start from the beginning or how I became a libertarian or how I got involved in politics in general?
Yeah, I tell you what, just start from how you started getting interested in politics in general.
Well, as far as getting interested in it, I've always been interested in it because my grandfather on my mother's side was a huge, he was actually a huge Democrat and a UAW guy. He worked for Detroit Diesel, you know, and he helped raise me. So I spent a lot of time there, you know, a single mom situation, blah, blah, blah. So I was at my grandfather's house a lot. And, you know, it was always, you know, UAW and, you know, get the Democrat. And I remember Michael Dukakis against George Bush, right? I remember that. I totally remember that. And, you know, I remember being like, yeah, Michael Dukakis, because my grandpa was Michael Dukakis. Well, go forward a few years, you know, I was raised Southern Baptist as well. So the Southern Baptist Church was like, you know, hey, pretty much if anybody knows about the Southern Baptist Church, there's a lot of hellfire and brimstone in the Southern Baptist Church. So pretty much if you're a Democrat, you're going to hell. So I've never been a Democrat my entire life because of that. You know, you vote that way. I remember they were telling us that, you know, the Clintons, if Bill Clinton gets elected, the rapture is going to come. And as a little child, I'm like, I don't want to die. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not ready to go yet, per se. I'm like, I don't want to be a Democrat because I don't want to die. You know what I mean? And I remember stuff like that. And it all seems silly, but that's kind of how it started. You know, but fast forward to, you know, when I was finally able to vote, which when I was 18, and I wasn't quite for a president yet because that was 1998. I was 18. So there was no presidential election. And I really can't tell you who was running for governor in 1998 because but I voted Republican that year because I didn't want to go to hell. So like, you know what I mean? Like it was one of those things. I know I did that, but I do remember my first presidential election, which was 2000, George Bush. Of course I supported George Bush. Of course I did. And so I did that and, you know, 9/11 came and he, you know, they gave us all the propaganda. So I was like, yeah, let's go to war. We're going to kill all the fucking top. Sorry.
No, you're good, dude. You're good.
We're gonna kill all the towel heads in the Middle East is what I'm thinking to myself. Like they hate our freedom, they hate us, they hate our lives, they hate Christians. We have to go kill them all. I jumped on board for that 100%. I ate it up, dude. I was like, boom, 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 spoon feed it to me. We got to go get these guys. And then after about 4 years, I was like, is this what we really want to do? But I was like, hey, man, it's a really bad idea to change hands in the middle of a war. So I was like, yeah, George Bush again. I'm not voting Democrat. I didn't really know about libertarians yet. I had no idea what that was. I knew there was Republicans and Democrats. I remember there was independents a little bit because I'm old enough to remember Ross Perot, and we can get into that later. But, you know, as far as all that goes, you know, I was like, well, we got to vote for Bush again because we can't change hands in the middle of a war. So we, you know, I did it again, whatever. And then 2007 came along and I was very disheartened about everything, all of it. I was like, okay, this son of a bitch is spending all the money. Not only is he spending it, he's having it printed, you know, because I understood the concept of printing money by then. I was in my later 20s. And the war itself didn't make sense to me because why in the hell did we go to Iraq in the first place when the enemy, per se, Osama bin Laden, quote unquote, was over there in Afghanistan, quote unquote? You know, we didn't know nothing. We just went by, you know, I was one of those people who were just going, eating it up, the propaganda, eating it up, you know. But something didn't smell right. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, okay, this isn't working for me. I'm looking for something different. And then all of a sudden, I saw this crazy old man, lunatic old man, right? Talking about how we need to abolish the IRS and the Fed. And, you know, what are we doing over there in the first place type situation. If you don't know who I'm talking about Ron Paul. This is 2007. I'm like, okay, man, I like what you're talking about. So I'm going to follow you now. I'm going to follow every step you're taking, every move you're making, not to sound like a creeper, but like, that's where I was at. You know, I'm just going to follow you because I like what you're talking about right now, especially when of all people, there was something on TV where they asked, you know, what did you think about 9/11 to the candidates at the time for president? You know, and the Republican was like, oh, you know, they hate our freedom and blah, blah, blah. And the Democrat was like, yeah, they hate our freedom and blah, blah, blah. And then Ron Paul gets up there. I'll never forget this in my entire life. Ron Paul gets up there and says, you know, this wouldn't have happened if you weren't meddling in other people's business, right? And I was like, whoa, dude, nobody's ever said that ever in the last like 7 years of all this shit. Like, are you kidding me right now? Yes, you have my vote right now. We're homies. I got you no matter what. And that's where it began. That's, you know, and it's grown since then. But Joel, like, let's get Joel in this.
Yeah, let's hear it, man.
I'm from New Jersey, a very blue state, but I was in like a really kind of real red pocket of New Jersey. And the community I grew up in was an evangelical, like a real conservative fundamental, like Baptist, like school, church. That's all I was around growing up. So everything I was taught in schools from, that perspective. So that's like where I'm from. Or like, that's kind of the sod I like broke out of and I never was really, really into like politics per se. I liked history, or I thought I did in school. I'm like, oh, I like history. I like government class. Little did I know. But then, you know, this, what I'm being taught isn't really accurate information, but, you know, I was just always a bit of contrarian. I didn't really, I always had a lot of questions about stuff I was taught in school, like religiously, politically, the government, like how come literally every, thing bad that happens is never Republicans' fault. Like we could go through all the press, everything. It was just like, oh, the economy was good under a Democrat president. It's because it was really the Republican that set up the good policies that allowed the Democrat, you know, so basically it was just complete like bias. So like maybe I don't know if I want to go as far as saying like brainwashing, but that's basically like what you're, what I was essentially taught. So, and it probably wasn't until like right when COVID started, when I just was like, I listened to a few, like Peter, I saw some Peter Schiff videos And that got me thinking, like, okay, this guy's saying some crazy stuff. Like, he's talking about this Federal Reserve. What's that? He's talking about, like, oh, the minimum wage that's from, like, has, like, racist start, racist. I knew that stuff was, like, oh, the minimum wage or, like, raising the minimum wage is a bad idea, but I didn't really know why. Oh, okay, I can, here's the history of it. Okay. So it got me going down a rabbit hole, and then I got into, like, Tom Woods videos, and then from there, I just kind of, I just realized that, yeah, like what Sean was saying with the Iraq war, like, yeah, we were told about all these, like weapons labs and weapons of mass destruction that doesn't exist. And then, here's a lie about, first Iraq war that, oh, okay. I never was taught that, but this is verified. So that's just when I was like, okay. And then of course all the COVID lies. And then I'm like, okay. I'm definitely, I'm not a Republican. Like, I don't want to be a part of this or in your group or in your like cult per se. And I'm definitely like, I know, the left wing is just, I mean, I don't have to tell you how, you know, it's a mental illness. I mean, we all know that. So I'm like, okay, well, I have nowhere to go. I'm just going to, then, you know, of course going down like Tom Woods rabbit holes, you get familiar with the Mises Institute and other libertarians and Austrian economics. Like, okay, yeah, these people make a lot of sense. They're real consistent. There's not really like a real deviation from one issue to another of like what their policy is. We're anti-war. Okay. And they're anti-war across the board. It isn't, oh, we're anti-war here, but in this sense, like we saw with Ukraine, oh, we're anti-war for Ukraine. And then when it comes to Israel, then all of a sudden there's plenty of money for Israel. Whereas 2 seconds before we couldn't afford to send money to Ukraine. So I'm like, oh, libertarians are consistent. They have principles. They're getting, attacked from all sides, but they're not like changing their position, like because they are clearly like they know what they believe. They have like a backbone. They're consistent and the most intellectually honest. I'm like, okay, these are my kind of people. So that's more or less my journey to like libertarianism per se, and breaking out of that kind of like binary list, like every, you know, it's red or blue, you know, Democrats bad. And like what Sean was saying with Democrats going to hell, I remember, I'll never forget when I heard a lady in my church say, if you're a Democrat, you can't go to heaven. So I'm like, I don't know, in like high school, I'm like, well, that's literally not in the Bible. Like we're like a Christian church. We believe in the Bible and, you know, God's word and all this kind of stuff. But like, where's that in the Bible? You know what I mean? Like, so then that's when I'm like, okay, this is like, doesn't make any sense. Like, how can you go around saying that? Like, there's no way you can know whether a Democrat is like a born again Christian or not. Like, you, I mean, this is just, so, and then that's just kind of, you know, from there, just trying to ask as many questions as possible. And, you know, here we are. And it's been a good journey so far. And I can't wait to see where it takes me in the future.
Yeah, well, I love it. Well, we have a problem in our society where I think we're more politicized now than at any point in my life. And I live in Kentucky, so pretty much everyone that I know has like libertarian leanings. They don't know what libertarianism is, but they have those leanings, but they still identify with either the Republican or the Democratic Party. And you can definitely feel that those affiliations are held more strongly now than they were before. But one of the things that like, and again, I love everyone in my life, all my friends and family, love them to death. And many of them are way more intelligent than I am, but they don't read any political or economic philosophy, but they think that they understand all of these incredibly complicated issues that they see in the media. And in reality, the only people I know that are actually like doing their homework on this and reading the books and doing the research are libertarians. Like those are literally the only people I know that are actually like doing their own studying. So I want to throw this out to you guys. What motivated you guys, not just to embrace like libertarian philosophy? You know, you have Ron Paul and you have all the inconsistencies that are taking place in our political system. What motivated you guys to actually read and do your own research on this stuff?
You want to go first?
Start first. Well, because what motivated me was like why when I was in school, I liked history. Like I didn't really care for too many subjects, but history and like government class, like I was really into it. I looked forward to those classes. I like learning about it. So there was just an innate curiosity to try to kind of learn these issues. And, you know, when I was thinking I was like a history buff or whatever, I'm like, oh yeah, I didn't know anything because everything I was taught was wrong. So it's like, now what do I have to, I need to make up for lost time as it were. And I spent 18, I don't know, 1 year in college. So I don't know, 18, let's just say 20 years of just being like misinformed. intentionally or not, about government history. And I thought I was learning the truth. I thought I knew stuff. And then there was this kind of like world shattering. I'm like, okay, I don't know really anything. I need to start learning like what's really happening. What's really happening with all these wars? What's going on with the economy? How come like prices are always rising, like perpetually forever? You know, when my grandma, you know, went to the grocery store, like a bread was a nickel. Like, why is it like $3 now? Like, why? Like, that's okay. Now the Austrian economics teaches it. So it's like, basically like, okay, I need to relearn all the things that the truth that I didn't learn, growing up, in my young adult life. So, and also to, maybe help, quote unquote, to like everyone in my family is still like Republican, conservative, and that kind of thing. Like, all the stereotypes, think the stereotypical like evangelical conservative Zionist, like boomer con, like that's basically it. So it's like, I want to maybe help you see those people see kind of some different perspectives and alternative point of view. And instead of just like this, just accepting like the Republican person said this is true, Democrat said that's false. So I'm just getting out of the binary thinking, realizing really at the end of the day, it's more or less like the state versus you. And you need to realize that the person you're voting for, like, let's first of all find out what they're doing in office, because I don't think most people who are generally voting the two-party system do. So it's like, let's learn that. Let's see, where has the government lied recently? When have they lied in the past? And like, hey, let's just realize these are dishonest people. And let's think for ourselves. Let's not take their word for it. Because if I can point like 10 lies, like on big issues, every war been lied into, any economic issue, there's some BS reason why, oh, it's the consumer's fault or whatever, like always trying to blame it on somebody, or inflation's actually good. So it's like, okay, look at all these like false, like you can't trust them. So now we need to go a different way and find out the actual truth of the matter. So that's what motivated me is, now that I have a child, it's okay. Now I want him to make sure I need to know the truth. I need to know actual history and know what's actually going on in government and know who the supposed enemy class is, because I want to make sure he's taught truth and accurate history from the start, not having to play catch up like I am now. So,
yeah, I love it. Sean, what about you, man?
Man, so here's the thing. I tell you, I run into Ron Paul like 2007-ish, right? And then that comes and goes. I vote for him in 2008. And a little while later, this comes out.
In the Fed.
This book's right here. And so that's where it started for me. So I read this book. Now, mind you, at the time, I'm renting a room from my buddy in a double-wide trailer. Actually, it was a single and a half-wide. It wasn't even a double-wide, honestly. It was considered a single and a half. I'm reading this book, and after I tell you I run into this crazy guy. This was the crazy guy, by the way, that was talking about and abolishing the IRS and all that stuff is Ron Paul. Ron Paul was a gift from God, honestly. He really was, because he was explaining things to people that people didn't necessarily understand. And I think that's why he didn't get so much, you know, traction, is because, you know, what he was spitting at that time, you know, was blasphemy. Honestly, it really was blasphemy. Like, how are you going to end the Fed? How are you going to abolish the IRS? How are you going to do all these things and have your state still run? This is where people were coming from. In my mind, I'm like, yes, yes, and yes. Get rid of it all. But like, that was my first, and I want to say I read this book in 2011, 12-ish. Maybe 2010, maybe. I don't even know. It's been so long. But I was definitely living in the single and a half wide trailer, you know. And I read this book and I'm like, wow.
Down by the river.
I should have been living in a van down by the river, for real. But like, I read this book and I'm like, wow, man, this is some really eye-opening stuff. He's explaining to you how the Fed works and what they do behind closed doors. And also, not only does he explain why that's bad, But he explains why the whole entity is bad in the first place. So I'm like, okay, you know, I'm on board with this. But if I'm being quite honest with you, that was probably the last book I read for maybe a decade. Honestly, other than some magazine articles and some bullshit you see on social media or whatever, you know what I mean? But like, that was the last book I read. I wasn't a big reader. It wasn't my thing. It just wasn't, you know, I was like, I for a while there, I was in party mode. I want to party, whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. I just didn't read for a long time. But then, you know, we'll get into this a little bit later, how, you know, books became important and whatever, but like, it was one of those things where that book really, really like opened my eyes to the corruption inside. And it wasn't just the Democrats. That was the thing. But at the time when I was reading it, Obama was elected and he was a train wreck. You know, it went from one train wreck to the next train wreck. And I understand, like, people loved Obama. People really did. And to be quite frank with y'all, like, when it came to public speaking, there wasn't too many people better than Barack Obama. Honestly, that guy knew how to pull the heartstrings. He knew what to say. He, you know, he knew what to do in those situations when he was public speaking. That is the one thing I will give that man, you know, when it comes to anything, is he knew how to speak to people. And so people ate it up. Obviously, they ate it up, just like, you know, I was eating up George Bush, you know, for all those years. People were eating up Obama for all those years. But little did we know at the time how evil that man really was. You know, he was no better than Bush. He really was no better than Bush. The only difference between Barack Obama and George Bush was Barack Obama was droning children while wearing his Nobel Peace Prize. That's the big difference. That's it. Otherwise, they're the same guy. You know?
Yeah. It's completely true. It was 16 years of the exact same presidency. There's almost no policy difference between the Bush and the Obama administrations.
Zero.
Just more, you know, gay stuff in the second half of the rainbow flags.
Yeah. What's so wild about that, though, and what progressives forget is that when Barack Obama ran in 2008, he ran on a traditional marriage platform, you know, which right now that would get you burned at the stake in the Democratic Party if you ran on a platform of affirming traditional marriage. But things have changed. Things have changed. Well, and, you know, Sean, just a couple of, and I know you, you know, you've shared this before on your own show, but you had some things happen in your own personal life a little over a year ago, and you started hashtag Liberty Book Club on Twitter. Why did you start that? What's been some of the results of that work?
So the reason, and Joel was a big part of this, man. Zeal, my man, I'm wearing your hat, of course. The whole thing about it was I was fixing to be laid up for a long time. I had major surgery. They literally cut out some of my insides. I got some of my insides missing now. And I was going to be laid up for an extremely long time. And I knew that. On top of the episodes that I had that led up to surgery, and I needed something to do while I was laid up. I needed something to do. What else are you going to do? You got to read books. I'm not going to sit there and watch TV. I hate TV with a passion. Unless there's sports, I love sports with a passion. You know, I'm down with, you know, college football and NFL and my baseball. Those are my things. You know, I'm not too big on hockey and basketball and all that. But like, when it comes to sports, I need those things in my life. But those things aren't really happening, you know, in the wintertime. So, you know, the Super Bowl's over, you know, baseball hasn't started yet. So I'm like, man, I need something to do. So I'm going to read some books. So I ordered three books. My three original books were actually End the Fed, Anatomy of the State by Rothbard. And these were the first three original books. These are the three original books that started Liberty Book Club. And this is No Treason by Lysander Spooner. That's why I started it. And then I started reading. And I'm like, holy shit, man, I need to read some more. And then it's like, read some more. And I'm like, read this book. I'm on social media now. Joel was one of the people, honestly, you know, because, you know, right now when this show, while we're doing this show right now, this is roughly about a week after my initial episode from being sick. I almost died. Literally, My insides tried to kill me. My colon was perforated. I had an abscess that was draining inside of me. I was in really bad shape. And so Joel, AKA the Infinite Zeal Syndicate, and, you know, a couple other people were some folks that really kind of reached out to me and were like, are you all right? Is everything okay? Is there anything we can do? Now, mind you, I was in the middle of doing Mittens for Detroit. Mittens for Detroit, where we were collecting gloves and mittens for people who needed them. It's cold here in the city, you know, especially in the wintertime. Joel was like, man, I love what you're doing. You know, I would love to send you some things up here. He sent some stuff up here, you know, for the cause and whatnot, you know, and you were very intricate in that, man. I love you forever for that, man. Like, honestly, Zeal, man, you're my guy. Like, honestly, man. And so, but no, like, you know, a lot of people don't know this. So I want to put it out there, like between him and Cassie Remor, who is Subscript Pirate, you know, we don't see him too much on Twitter anymore. He's got a lot going on in life, but like between those two guys, like they really checked on me and made sure I was okay. Or that things were going well and made sure like my mitten drive were going okay. And I feel really bad. I haven't done anything like that this year. You know, and I really need to get back to that and I'll own that. But like those guys are really, really, you know, like, hey, we want to help you. We want you to, you know, see you get through this. So I love you guys forever for that, honestly. But like, you know, circle back to, you know, a few months later when I'm having surgery and I need something to do. Well, you know, Joel's like, yeah, man. And we had another name for it. Do you remember that?
I don't know. It was the name I think I came up with that was very cumbersome and long. And then you're just like, how about we just call it Liberty Book Club? I'm like, oh, dude, that just makes so much sense. It's short and concise and it works. So it was all you.
Yeah, it was something like that. But you were a part of it. Like, seriously, you were a part of it. And it kind of grew after that. Like, people were like, okay. And then all of a sudden you had people like, you know, Lars Mapstead putting their books out there. And even Larry Sharp put his books out there a couple times, you know, and that was before we actually started the actual Liberty Book Club on Twitter or whatever, but like, or X, whatever you want to call it. But like, it was one of those things where, you know, it was just something, hey, read these books, you know, get the message out there, you know, get people to unindoctrinate themselves. Cause we've been indoctrinated our entire lives. You have, we all have, me included.
And some books changed hands as well, didn't they?
Let's talk about that. This is really funny, actually. So in the midst of all this, I had ordered some books. Oh, man. Actually, one of those books I gave you was a lie. It wasn't Anatomy of the State. The other two were right. It was The Theory of Money and Credit by Ludwig von Mises. So it was End the Fed by Ron Paul, No Treason by Spooner, and The Theory of Money and Credit by Ludwig von Mises, or Ludwig, whatever you want to call him. So those were the three original books that I had posted that kind of was like for the whole social media thing. Well, I got through about six chapters of Theory, right, by Mises. You guys, I'm in my mid-40s. My eyes are not the best anymore, and the actual font they printed that book in was not even Christian. It was not funny. It, you know, and I have some prescription cheaters. I don't have the cheaters you buy from Rite Aid. I had gone to the optometrist. My eyes were bad enough that I needed prescription cheaters. Those weren't cutting it. And so one day I hit him up. I said, hey man, do you want, I just see him. I'm like, do you want this book? And he's like, yeah, why not? Or whatever. I was like, I really can't read it. Like, I can't see it. It's not working. We had a really good laugh about it. And he goes, well, I'd like to send you something back. Ah, there it is. Show the font.
It's actually pretty criminal, because not only is this font so small.
Yeah.
If you look at there's just so much blanks. Like, you can like utilize the space and make the font bigger.
That doesn't make any sense.
Bringing that on, man. Now I have proof that this was not
Who does this?
Yeah. All right. Now I know most of the people that are listening to this, they're not gonna know unless they've seen it before, but it is seriously like the book is, I don't know, it looks like an 8x11 or something like that, but there is like 3-inch margins with like tiny,
half the page
tiny
is not
tags.
Being used because they just crammed it into like a tiny little block and then just white space all around. It's like, wow.
That's ugly. I guess they wanted you to take a lot of notes.
Yeah, apparently.
And so I couldn't read it. I just couldn't do it. I got through about 6 chapters and I was like, absolutely not. I can't do it no more. And so I'm like, hey, man, do you want this book? I'll send it to you. He's like, yeah, but I have this book to send you back. And I think this is a big one we should talk about now that we're getting into this. And it was Enough Already by Scott Horton.
Because that book was actually given to somebody, I forget who it was. I don't think they're too active on Twitter anymore, but someone like randomly like a year, over a year ago was like, I have this extra Enough Already copy from Scott Horton. Who wants it? So I was like, I'll take it. And so the guy mailed it to me. And so it's like, oh, I'll just, you know, pay it forward. I'll just send it to Sean. Now Sean has it. So it's been changing hands, that the one that you have.
You know, so he sends me this book, right? And I can't remember. What was I reading? I was on my back end of some. I believe I was on the back end of The Liberty Solution by Derek Wills at that point, which is an amazing book on anarcho-capitalism, by the way, you guys. If you have a chance to read it, please do. He did a very good job. It's an ANCAP manifesto, honestly. And he did a fantastic job. But anyways, you know, we trade these books and I read it. I read it and I'm like, oh, my God. Now, as a Bush supporter for 2 terms and somebody who supported that war for 2 terms, boy, was I wrong. I already knew what I was wrong, but that solidified it. That book solidified the fact that everything I believed about that situation was wrong and everything checked out. Because when I say that, I had, you know, a lot of time to, you know, read stuff and look stuff up or whatever. I really did. I had nothing better to do. So as I'm reading through Scott Horton's book, Enough Already, I'm fact checking him. I had nothing better to do. I'm laid up. I got 24 staples in my belly. I can't do anything. I can't even come in my basement. Like, I'm recording in my basement. This is where I always do it. But at the time, I couldn't even come down here in the basement, you know? So I'm fact checking. I'm like, oh my God, this is damning. What I read was completely damning. Not only did they lie about the premises of the entire war and how we got there in the first place, they lied about the entire war. All of it. The entire thing, they lied. Little did we know that Saddam Hussein had offered to turn himself in or turn himself over. Little did we know that there was factions or regimes that were ready to give him to us. And the United States was like, no, we're not doing it. We don't want to. We're going to keep blowing up your children and women and anybody else who is innocent in the name of the things that we lied to you about. This is the premise of this book, and it's absolutely vile. And this book needs to be taught in institutions like high schools and universities all over the world. I'm not just talking about the United States. The propaganda they gave us on these wars were completely false, and it's wild to even realize, like, dude, the U.S. was playing devil's advocate then that entire time. Like, how is it that, and this is what you see in Enough Already, how is it that you're going to give weapons to the enemy in order to put your military bases up on their territory and then have them shooting at you with the exact same weapons? Please make this make sense. Please, for the love of God, make this make sense. Zeal, take it from there, man, because you're...
Well, I mean, I think you pretty much hit it. It was just kind of like shocking to me was just like the amount of like backstabbing going on. It's like, oh, we're going to fund this group, you know, this time. And then you fast forward a little bit. Oh, they're the bad guys now. We're going to attack them. Oh, was someone bin Laden? Oh, he used to be like a CIA asset or something. You know, so it's like all these... short term, like, okay, we're going to undo this rebel group because it's going to, in this scenario, where it's going to be beneficial. Well, okay, then in the next scenario, they're the enemy that we're going to tell all the American people they're like terrible, like these are like terrorists, we have to kill them. And so it's I just like the book is because it just, he does so much research and all the little like details and quotes and uses like people's own words like against them and how he just, it's just like, you just can't help but just be like, okay, yeah, never believe another word ever again. So that's what that book basically did for me. It was like, oh, when they're pushing through like Ukraine war propaganda or whatever war, it's like, yeah, I can, it's just so easy to see through things now because of books like that, that just kind of blew narratives wide open going on. I mean, it's, his book goes, you know, back, you know, a ways too. So just like, oh, like every war was a lie basically. So that's, I'm thankful for his book. I know he's got another one coming out soon. But yeah, he's like Sean said, it's required reading for any, you know, basically anyone.
Yeah. And I recommend it to pretty much everybody that I know. And for me, like I became like a libertarian with the 2016 election cycle because I heard Gary Johnson on CNN and I'd already had a lot of those beliefs. And I was like, oh, you know, I kind of believe all this stuff. And I know a lot of people don't like Gary Johnson, but for someone like me, who is just kind of like, I was afraid of, you know, what the media label conspiracy theory. So Gary Johnson was like, gave me permission to think about freedom in a different way. And for a couple of years I read Reason Magazine and I was kind of in that camp. But then when 2020 happened, like living through the COVID pandemic, I realized like there's something a lot bigger going on than just these people that are in the government are incompetent. Like there has to be something more than that. And that was when I really started reading. And so there were three books that really like kind of transformed me. One was Thomas Sowell's Economic Facts and Fallacies, because I was worried about what the payment checks were going to do for everyone. The second one was Friedrich Hayek's The Road to Serfdom, which is a brilliant philosophical takedown of central planning. But the third one was Enough Already. And it was literally in the spring of 2021. I was on my computer at work on lunch. And I was reading an article on Reason Magazine about the wars. And I was like, man, I really don't know anything about what's happened overseas. And I remember just typing in Google, like books on the war on terror, and Scott Horton's book had just been published. And I was like, oh, this is written by a libertarian from a place called the Libertarian Christian Institute. And I bought that and immediately started reading it. And I think what Scott Horton's book did for me was it gave me the ability to empirically state that the government is not just wrong and misguided, but it's completely corrupt. Like you read that book, you can't trust anything that the government tells you anymore. And ever since then, I haven't. And it's just amazing that once you get kind of like once you're woken up to just how like evil and cynical our government is, they kill millions of people overseas essentially for money and power. Like you don't believe anything anymore. And I think that's a good position to be in. I recommend that book for absolutely everybody in my life.
Amen to that. And actually, like, let me point out one more thing that really stuck out to me in that book, and it's very relevant to what's happening today, is when, you know, in the 1980s, there was a war between Iraq and Iran. That's not a big secret. But the secret is that most people don't understand or realize or know is who were bankrolling those wars. Now, at one point, Saddam Hussein was an ally of the United States, and they were funding him during that war against Iran. The United States government was arming and funding Saddam Hussein during that war. Guess who was funding and arming the other side in Iran? Israel. So that's one that was one thing that really, you know, on top of the other, you know, sleeping with the enemy type situation, because we were funding and arming, you know, both sides, you know, whether it was Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, the Shiite, Sunnis, whoever, we were always playing devil's advocate. But this is relevant today, that because we were funding and arming wars from the opposite spectrum with our most major ally. What do you say about that? Like, how do you even believe what's happening in the situation when they, you know, our largest ally, other than the UK, the UK is probably our largest ally, let's be honest, but like our largest ally in the Middle East per se is funding and arming the enemy of the person that we are funding and arming. It just goes to show you right there that this is all just a game of money and politics and colonization, really.
And that's in, I think every single aspect of government is like that. And that was like when I was waiting for Enough Already to come to my house after I purchased it, I got on the podcatchers and I'd never heard of Tom Woods or that entire wing of the Libertarian Party before. It was like all, you know, Reason Magazine and kind of like, you know, conservatives that are libertarian ish. But I remember searching on the podcast feeds for Scott Horton because I wanted to listen to some of his stuff. And he did 3 episodes on the Tom Woods show, which I had never heard before, with Tom Woods on that book. And it was through that that I was introduced to Tom Woods and then Murray Rothbard. And I know, Sean, you got a flag of Murray Rothbard behind you. Another book that we wanted to talk about together before I kind of let you guys talk about your personal influences was Anatomy of the State by Murray Rothbard, which is not even really a full book. It's like 60 pages. It's very easy to read, and it will completely destroy your conception of what government does and does not do. So, Joel, I want to throw this over to you. The Anatomy of the State, how has that shaped you? What did you think about that work? Because it is a legend within
Yes, it is.
Circles.
And kind of the first thing is he starts it off, I believe, with the collective we are the government thing. And just that kind of just struck me as like, that is how it's framed, is we are the government. So it's basically like, okay, well, whatever the government does is fine. Like, I just inherently consent to it because I'm the government and you're the government and we're all the government. And that's democracy, isn't it? Like, it's for everybody. So, and it's just such a shallow, like, dumb, like, it's just obviously, it's just a farce. And the realization of, like, oh, yeah, the government, we all just think, like, the government, it's like, oh, yeah, whenever the government says something, it's so they have, you know, people's best interests in mind. They're here to look out for everybody. They're here for everybody's common good. They're just, like, a neutral kind of arbiter of right and wrong, making sure everybody is treated fairly and justly and no one's ripping off anybody. And it's like, okay, and that's just kind of rips the whole bandit off. It's like, no, basically, like, it's just a big, like, mob, and they're not out for your best interest, and they're not looking out for you. They're in it for themselves. And just basically, like, I love the cover of that book because it's, like, it's almost basically, like, scientific. Like, you'd go over to the anonymity of a person. Like, you can just go do that with the state and just kind of label it, that it just kind of made it more clear to me that the state just like a cancer basically, and Murray Rothbard definitely probably radicalized me more than anybody in that regard. And so thankful for that book. That's another one, and that's like, and for Murray Rothbard, I know he's got some long stuff. Like, that's a good little primer for anybody who, maybe I'll hand those out, put those as like stocking stuffers or something, because that's a good, just for anyone, just a good a good basic, simple kind of breakdown of what the government says that they are, what you're taught to believe that it is, and what it actually is, and what it is not. So that's up there as one of the most world-shattering books for me, is how I see, like, government. It's not just some, like, oh, yeah, it's just the government. Oh, the mayor and the city council and the police are all just, it's like Mayberry. Everybody all is just kind of here for each other and looking at it. And that's, it's nothing of the sort. So, and I know Sean, I'm sure Sean's got strong feelings about that book too, but it's one of the most influential books I've ever read in changing how I see things.
You know, when you say, you know, I have a lot to say about Murray Rothbard, I really do, because I, you know, first off, if you love Ron Paul, you have to love Murray Rothbard, because Murray Rothbard paved the landscape of the liberty movement that Ron Paul built on. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You know, Ron Paul talks about Rothbard all the time. I happen to be a huge Rothbardian myself. I love the man. His work is amazing. A lot of people have some qualms with him, mostly because his stuff is more like a teaching lecture. But I like that. I want to be taught. You know what I mean? I don't need. I guess it doesn't matter the way I'm getting taught, but I like the way that he lectures, you know, into it, because it's a teacher's standpoint and I'm the student at this point. If I'm reading your book, I'm the student, you know. So, but Murray Rothbard, Anatomy of the State, wow. He clearly states what the state is and what the state isn't. And what he also states is what the state doesn't like. And what the state does not like is a well-informed populace that can think for themselves. That's what the state wants. Lastly, they don't want you thinking for yourself. They want you to eat that spoon-fed propaganda like we all did for many years. You know, that's what they want to do. When it comes to what the state is, The state is just a gang of thieves that is ready to hurt you at any given moment if you don't conform to their ways. What the state is not is an entity that's going to help. You know, a lot of people be like, well, the government gives us this and the government gives us that. How can the government give you anything if it doesn't produce anything? That's a Javier Milei steal right there. Like, they can't give you anything if they don't produce anything. So they have to steal it from other individuals in order to give it to the other individuals. So how's that right? Because theft is like one of the ultimate sins. It's one of the ultimate, you know, invasions of private property. Because what most people don't understand about themselves is they themselves are private property. It's not about just what you own. It's not about you own your car or your home or, you know, your stupid books or whatever. You know what I mean? They're not stupid books, but you know what I mean? Like those are things you own, but you also own yourself. You own your life. You own your labor. So when the state is willing to take from somebody else to give from somebody else, that just goes to show that they are unable and or impossible to produce anything without the theft. You know, and that's what anatomy states on. And in this little, I believe, let's see how many pages this is. I want to say it's 64. No, I'm sorry. It is 55 pages, but it starts on page 9. You know what I mean? It's
an easy read, yeah.
Like, you can read this book in an afternoon, and this will change your life, honestly. This will change the trajectory of the way you look at government and the philosophy behind it and the spoon-fed bullshit they're telling you. This is a great introduction to what liberty really is, because most people don't understand what liberty is. Most people believe that liberty is, well, liberty is whatever my side, you know, says it is. And that can't be further from the truth. Literally, liberty means people have the liberty to do things that you don't agree with. That's liberty. That's freedom in a nutshell. And most people can't handle that. But that, you know, this book right here, this little primer, you know, there's something that you can read. Literally, I read this in an afternoon. It was fine. And that's the type of book that will change your mind and change your life.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. And you'll never look at government the same way again. And one of the things that I think, you know, both of you guys have already alluded to this, but Rothbard and really that entire philosophy of libertarianism is so philosophically and morally and economically consistent. There are no holes in that system at all. It's brilliant all the way through from start to finish. It's absolutely flawless. And that was what blew me away about it. And his arguments are really not that complicated. When he talks about how the state only exists because it confiscates money from other people, and really it's just a monopoly on violence. Like, those are the guys with guns and they take money, and that's all that the state is. Like, you can't refute that, because that, no matter what your views on, it doesn't matter how progressive you are. Like, at the end of the day, you know, you might think it's a good thing that there's a state that does those, but at the end of the day, that's all that it is. And I think that more people need to realize that. Now, I wanted to give both of you guys an opportunity to talk about some books that have influenced you. And Joel, I want to start with you, because not only do I want to give you a chance, you can talk about any book you want, but lately you have been tweeting a lot about our friend Abraham Lincoln. And let's go. I'm so excited to have you on for this. My mother is a huge fan of Abraham Lincoln, and I think she'll listen to this episode. And I've been trying to set the record straight on this guy for a really long time. So talk to us about your books first, and then talk to us about the research you've been doing on Abraham Lincoln and why, in fact, he is the Woodrow Wilson of the 19th century.
Oh, even worse than Woodrow Wilson. Well, there's a couple books. part of it is I kind of like antagonizing people who like deify, like the deification of like politicians, even the Constitution and this stuff. It really kind of irks me to like no end. Like, I not very many things get under my skin, but like when people like, when there's just worshiping like presidents or, and I have to be careful of that, like, you know, idol worship or like the flag or the Constitution, it just makes me want to tear them down. Like, not like tear down, like they tear down the Thomas Jefferson statue or something, but like, everything, when I found out like what I was taught about Abraham Lincoln was false, like I was just on a warpath. Like, okay, everyone's gonna know. I'm gonna make sure everybody knows. I don't care how many people get offended. So you asked about books. Here's a little one. Everyone knows War is a Racket. This is now a good one. I read. I was like, oh man, like war is like a big like business money making machine. like that. I'm like, you know, you think war is just these, you know, we're here to defend freedoms and blah, blah, blah. Well, it's a big money machine behind it. Another one that's, I think, a great book, Whiskey Rebellion, Make the Tax Man Afraid Again. I mean, what are we doing here? And then, so I have my Lincoln books. Of course, we all know Tom DiLorenzo's books, Lincoln Unmasked, The Problem with Lincoln. There's this great book called Force into Glory, Abraham Lincoln's White Dream. Basically, it's just a textbook about like Lincoln and colonization and the deportation program and how the Emancipation Proclamation was big like fraud. So I'm not going to get in a huge rant about Abraham Lincoln.
You can be as violent as you want on this show, man.
No, go on your rant, dude. I want to hear your rant.
He's the most deified man in America. Like we look out and we can see through all the propaganda, like the Israel war propaganda, the Ukraine, COVID, the economy, and libertarians see through it pretty well. You know, and but there's so many people who are just, you know, doesn't matter what the narrative is, they'll go along with it. They'll trust the official narrative. Shockingly, I don't know how. But it just kind of occurred to me, it's like when I realized that the amount of people that just think like, oh, Abraham Lincoln freed the slave, saint, you know, God-fearing man, that all he cared about was freeing slaves and, you know, those pesky, you know, Southerners, and he had to go down there and end slavery and have freedom and equality for everyone. And it's under people disbelieve all these BS narratives today, like coming out of government or just accepting the official story on things. Like they just believe whatever they're taught about history. And it's like, it's just objectively like, oh, Abraham Lincoln's a great emancipator. That's like, if you just ask people on the street, oh, he's a great emancipator, right? He freed the slaves. Oh, he just declared them free. And all of a sudden, all the slaves were just magically free in that instant. Well, if you actually read the Emancipation Proclamation, it didn't end slavery in the North. And, specifically excludes certain areas from freeing slaves. And those areas are under Union control. So he didn't free slaves in the North. And he didn't free slaves in Southern-controlled Union-controlled Southern territory. So it's like, so how did he the Confederate states were just like, well, Abraham Lincoln said the slaves are free, so I guess, well, we have no choice. We just have to, like, it makes no sense at all. It's on its face. But if you say that, you're like rewriting history, or it's some kind of 1619 project trying to tear down our forefathers. I'm like, but that's what he did. Like, he tried to, even before he was president, he was part of the Colonization Society. And the whole point of the Colonization Society is, Theron Bennett Jr. says ethnically cleanse. That might be kind of strong. Maybe not. But to deport blacks out of America to Liberia, to Haiti, to other places. This is like historical fact. Like I can go through all the quotes here. And this book's great. It's got quotes from William Seward, Secretary of State, Henry Clay Whitney. Was it Henry Clay Whitney? Like he was another, like, you know, people in Lincoln's circle. And it's just shocking to me how you see like statues of George Washington being torn down or Thomas Jefferson, because he's like racist and stuff. But somehow like Abraham Lincoln's like untouched, and he's like might be the most racist president like you've ever had. Didn't care about ending slavery. There's a book from a Lincoln, I have to look it up. I don't remember what it's called off the top of my head. From a Lincoln like cult like defender, like pro Lincoln person, and the book was making the case that Lincoln probably himself wrote the Corwin Amendment, which would have amended the Constitution and would have enshrined slavery in the Constitution, whereas the federal government couldn't do anything about slavery ever. So like Lincoln was a big supporter of that, proponent of that. Let's see. Oh, and there's also there's this book. It's free, and this is I don't want to get too. Take this into off the rails so Sean can talk. But it's on Google right now. It's called 14 Months in American Bastilles. And it's by Frank Key Howard. Now, Frank Key Howard is the grandson of Francis Scott Key. And we all know the story of Francis Scott Key and the war writing the Star-Spangled Banner outside Fort McHenry. Well, Frank Key Howard was a newspaper editor in Baltimore. And he wrote some basically writing how Lincoln's suspension of habeas corpus was unconstitutional. Lincoln had him arrested and thrown in Fort McHenry. So it's kind of like ironic. And in the book, he lays out how Lincoln basically went into Baltimore, arrested city council members, arrested the police chief, disbanded the police department, like prominent politicians in Baltimore and like newspaper editors and and publishers that wrote anything critical of Abraham Lincoln, just dragged away. Never charged with a crime, just showed up at his house like you're coming with it. That's like Stalin-esque tactics. I have this meme comparing Joseph Stalin and Abraham Lincoln. And it's like, you know, suppress free speech, control the media, which he did. You know, he shut down over 300 newspapers, arrested dissidents, jailed tens of thousands of people for criticism, called them like traitors and deported the congressmen. What else did he do? Ethnically cleanse. He started the civil war over tariff revenue. And then he communist hero. So Abraham Lincoln, pen pals with Karl Marx. Maybe pen pals is a little bit loose of a term, but they exchanged letters. Clearly there was some sort of respect there. You know, there was a famous like Lincoln Lenin Day celebration. So like these communist groups are celebrating, and they have portraits of Stalin, Lenin, and Abraham Lincoln's the biggest one. I found that interesting. The biggest portrait at the communist convention was Abraham Lincoln. And then last thing I'll say on it is there's a professor named Eric Foner, very pro-Lincoln guy, Marxist professor, basically a commie. And when the Soviet Union fell, he basically was like, well, isn't it a shame that Abraham Lincoln wasn't in charge of the Soviet Union? Because if he was, he would have sent the tanks in, and he would have never let any of these countries have their independence. Like, oh man, this Abraham Lincoln, he would have showed the Soviet Union how it's done, you know? So it's like, oh, that's kind of interesting to say about, you know, this supposedly godlike figure we're all supposed to worship. So yeah, so one of the reasons I hammer on Abraham Lincoln so hard is because it just, to me, it's just another sign of like breaking through, like just in people's, what they have ingrained and just what they've been brainwashed to believe for years and years and years and years. And to no fault of their own, I'm sure my teachers believe that too. And that's what makes propaganda so effective, is when the person teaching it to you actually believes they're teaching you the truth. And so that's why I go up to Lincoln, is because that's part of like the propaganda machine. Doesn't matter, like Ukraine, yeah, COVID, but like if you can't see and acknowledge this basic fact, like our great emancipator supposedly, or our greatest president, then you're not really ready for like freedom and those kind of things. It's because like you see Lincoln like reference all the time. It's like, well, Lincoln, like Trump, I think just recently referenced Lincoln, and whenever they want to do something, you just reference Lincoln. Well, if you can get everyone to worship a dictator effectively, then yeah, you can just reference Lincoln and then you can do whatever you want. So to me, that's the power of the Lincoln propaganda. Get everyone to worship this dictator, and then you can just drop Lincoln's name, and then you can basically, it doesn't matter what you do, because Lincoln is just guilty of the worst atrocities you could imagine. So yeah, that's my spiel on Abraham Lincoln. I encourage everyone to go doing your own research and the importance of that. And when I started doing that with Abraham Lincoln, that kind of was like, oh, okay, wow, like what else am I being lied about? So I'm trying to, one meme at a time, just kind of break through the Lincoln propaganda.
Hey, you got to slaughter the sacred cows, man. And that was a beautiful description. Just absolutely, absolutely perfect. And as you said before, in case any of the listeners want to follow this up, Thomas DiLorenzo, who I think, is he the new chair of the Mises Institute? Did I see that? Mm-hmm. Or is he?
Yeah, he's the new president, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, the new president. Right. So great, great guy, has a lot of excellent books. So go and check those out. Sean, I want to throw it over to you. Besides the books we've already talked about, what were some of the big ones for you that really helped shape your perspective?
Well, let me chime in real quick, because, you know, when he was talking about Abraham Lincoln, that all sounded very eerily familiar to me. Like, so let me ask you this, Joel, what's the difference between Abraham Lincoln and Joe Biden?
Well, at least when Joe Biden arrests political prisoners, they have a kangaroo court trial, or at least they get a show trial. You know, Lincoln didn't even give people that.
Yeah, like that was one thing that people don't get it. Like, Lincoln was a son of a bitch. Lincoln was literally a racist tyrant who did not want whites and blacks mingling at all, to be quite honest with you. And you can look for yourself.
Yeah, he ran on that in Illinois. Like, I'm going to keep blacks out of office. I'm going to not let them marry whites.
Yep. And then not to mention, he wanted to deport them. And you touch on that. He wanted to deport black people back to Africa. So how are you freeing the slaves if you just want to get rid of them? You know what I mean? It just, nothing makes sense. But we live in a world where nothing makes sense and everything contradicts itself. You know, I've been saying that for years now. But when it comes to like other books that really shaped, you know, my feelings on things, more Rothbard, For a New Liberty by Murray Rothbard, A Libertarian Manifesto. Now, this is a long read. This is about 400 pages, roughly. I had nothing better to do when I was sick, so I burned through it in a week. But, you know, not a lot of people have that time. But this is a beautiful manifesto on how libertarianism would work and how it would work. It breaks down each situation to a T, how it would work in a libertarian and or stateless society. Because Rothbard was an anarchist. He wasn't necessarily a libertarian. He was an anarchist. That's where I say I'm an ANCAP, dude. That's my thing. But, you know, he breaks it down beautifully, like each scenario, like to stupid things like marriage or whatever it may be. You know, he just breaks it all down. And he talks, he has references on how stateless societies worked in the book too. You know, I talked about it on my show with Derek Wills, who wrote The Liberty Solution. Like, you know, he talked about 17th century Ireland that was stateless. They had no government, and it lasted for 1,000 years. And they did it through, you know, people policing themselves with the Tuathas and the Brehons, or the Brehones, whatever you want to call them. You know, I don't know the actual way to say it, you know, but, you know, the Tuathas were the police per se, but they were just regular individuals who knew the laws of the land. And the Brehons or the Brehones, or, you know, they were the jury per se who knew the laws of the land, and they all made it work, you know, and it worked for 1,000 years. It worked great. And unfortunately, England came in and took over. But it did take England 2 centuries to take over that stateless society, because there was no government to make a deal. Because a lot of times, like, look at what's happening right now with Israel and in Palestine. You know, there's a ceasefire right now because governments made deals. You know, which is good. You know, I hope the hostages, I hope, you know, everybody, you know, I have my own feelings about that war over there right now. And that's not what the show's about. But, like, you know, there's governments to make deals to get things done the way they want it to be done. But, you know, there's exchanges that don't make sense in that. That wasn't happening in a stateless society. We're not going to trade you, you know, in a stateless society. We're not trading you, you know, terrorist type people for, you know, whoever. We're not just giving you prisoners. Like, that's crazy to me. But the United States does that to this day. I mean, they will exchange political prisoners for next to nothing. And I'm like, wait a minute here. You know, think about, oh God, I can't remember the name right now. The WNBA chick that got arrested.
Is that Brittany Griner?
Yeah. Brittany Griner. Yeah. Like, the trade-off that went between her and between what the United States got, and what Russia got, we literally gave up a legit prisoner for that. Like, we gave up a person who hurt people and took their stuff. You know what I mean? They violated the NAP. We gave up something like that for somebody who brought drugs into a state that had illegal drugs, that knew better. You know what I mean? Like, that wasn't happening in a stateless society. And I'll probably catch flack for saying that, but I don't feel sorry for that. That was a horrible trade, honestly, you know? But who am I? Who am I? I'm just a podcaster. I'm just another white guy with a mic, right? You know, whatever. But no, like, but this book, For a New Liberty, oh my God, this book will change your life. It just touches on everything, like anything you need to know, whether it be law or society or, you know, anything. Like, seriously, it breaks it down to a T. Rothbard was amazing. And, you know, once again, he's a lecture guy. So he teaches, he's literally teaching you. It's not just a book that he wrote. He's teaching you something. But, you know, as far as other books that, you know, really shape the way I think, I mean, I gotta pull this out, dude. The Creature of Jekyll Island, dude. Like, this is, These are things that, you know, this is another book that needs to be taught in high schools and universities everywhere, because it teaches you what the banking system really is. You know, reading books is, the Liberty Book Club is about re-educating yourself. It's about
re-education indoctrinating
yourself. It really is, though. It's about unindoctrinating the nonsense that you got about Abraham Lincoln, or God, we just had Thanksgiving. Oh my God. Like, what did they teach us about Thanksgiving for all our entire lives? Like, they just saw, you know, the pilgrims came here and broke bread with the Indians and everything was fine. No, they came here to slaughter the red man. They literally had propaganda in England that said, hey, come to here, come to this place and slaughter the red man. I remember seeing something on a History Channel about this many years ago, because I'm a big pothead, and that was something you do when you smoke dope is watch the History Channel or Animal Planet or whatever it may be. I watched a shit ton of History Channel, and that was one thing they really hammered home about, you know, because a lot of that's propaganda nonsense. But when it came to them talking about, you know, England coming here to America, as, you know, as it was drawn in our history books as this glorious thing, it wasn't at all. They came here, they found the land, and they wanted it, so they took it because they had guns and the Native Americans had bows and arrows. That's how it went down. And there was propaganda that said, we are going to slaughter the red man. Come here and get you a red man. There was propaganda like that out there. They didn't come here to just sightsee. They came here to colonize, and that's exactly what they did. But I mean, as far as like, dude, I believe I've read 13 books this year, but I read 7 of them in 7 weeks, because once I got back to work, it was a lot harder to read. But I mean, there's other books, you know, like the Uncommunist Manifesto by Alex Vecchi. And here, actually, I have that right here. This was an amazing read, the Uncommunist Manifesto. And it's another short one. How many is this? About 70 pages. I read this in a day too. You know what I mean? Like, but this is Alex Vecchi and Mark Ross. Amazing book, very Bitcoin heavy, if that's your thing, you know. But like The Revolution by Ron Paul. Oh my God. Like, are you kidding me? Like, these are just, you know, this is another manifesto, really. I read a bunch of manifestos this year. The Liberty Solution by Derek Wills, an anarcho-capitalist manifesto. Wow. You know, and it's all ways to learn what liberty really is. And it's also like, when it comes to Jekyll Island, it tells you about the banking system and how vile it is, and even how it started. Like, it goes to the very beginning when 7 men were boarding a train in secret, and their train car had to be picked up, you know, after the train started, because nobody could see them boarding together like that, you know. And it has to, you know, it was the Rothschilds and JP Morgan. And I can't think of the other, you know, people right now, but it was 7 rival bankers. They were rival bankers that decided they're going to start this monopoly bank that was going to control everything, you know. And it breaks it down to fractional reserve banking and how the wars work, because, you know, all the wars are bankers' wars at this point. There's no secret. You know, it's not a secret that, you know, we have been at war in the United States since the inception of the Federal Reserve in 1913. World War I came all of a sudden. And then, I don't want to say all of a sudden, I need to pick my words better, but like, you know, World War I comes, and then it's never stopped. It's literally never stopped. You know, we've been a country since 1776, and I can't remember if it's 10 or 12 years off the top of my head, but it's only been 10 or 12 years that we've had time of actual peace in this country. And it all has to do with central banking, all of it, you know. And that's what the creature will bring you into. Or you could read books like, you know, Carol Roth dropped this year.
Oh, good book.
Wow. Wow. You Will Own Nothing, it's called. And the cover, it says, you know, it crossed off, you own a house, a car, a business, stocks, your life. You know, she crosses all those out and it says, you own nothing, right? Because that's what they want at this point, is want us to own nothing and be happy. They want to own the land. They want to own the crops, the food, all of it. And they just want it to be in control of everything. She speaks about, you know, social credit scores, the WEF, stuff like that. amazing book. And she, you know, it's about the attack on your prosperity, really is what it is, you know, and even if you're poor, you still have prosperity. You still own things if you're poor, but they don't want you to own anything at all, you know? And so that was something else that, you know, it's all about re-educating yourself from the status quo that if you were, you know, brought up in the, you know, government school system, you know, that you were spoon-fed lies your entire lives. You know, so that's why the Liberty Book Club is important, is to re-educate yourself and really, you know, debunk the stuff that you were taught in school. And not to say that, you know, you need to learn reading, writing, and arithmetic. You need to know those things. You need to learn how to read. You need to know how to do math. You need those things to get by in life. But when it comes to American history, no, that's all false, 100%. And the fact of the matter is, you know, you can put it to sleep right away that, you know, when it comes to what you learned in school in American history, that America was always the good guys. Always. Now, just being a critical thinker in general, that's impossible. It's impossible for somebody to always be the good guy. I'm not always a good guy. You're not always a good guy. You're not always a good guy. It's impossible. Everybody has flaws and tendencies that will, you know, not be the best per se. So if you're telling me that one person was always right all the time, you got me messed up. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, man, that was a really great review, and you're absolutely correct. I think you come back to something that I said before we started this conversation. I think that, at least in my context in Kentucky, there are a lot of people that are completely ignorant about politics and economics, not for any like, in particularly insidious reason. It's like you said, people are busy. They have lives. They have kids. They have jobs. Like, they don't have time to read all these complicated books, and a lot of them, what they believe about politics was taught to them, like you said, Sean, in school. So they just accept what they were taught in school, and that's pretty much the end of the story. But I will say, where I'm at after COVID, there seems to be more people now than ever that are open to alternative ways of understanding the government and of understanding history, because I think that they realized that they were lied to. And I know, even like a lot of my friends that, you know, I don't know any, I do have some friends that are hardcore progressives, but for a lot of my friends that are just kind of like old school Democrats, like even they are starting to realize that something's not right. Like, they might not be able to articulate it and they might want more government as a solution, but people know that things aren't right. So I wanted to ask you guys, do you think that there is an opportunity now for Americans to accept alternative narratives, to go back and actually do their own research, try to figure out what actually happened in history? Do you think that there's an opening for that? And if so, how do we go about helping those people get the information that they need to make better choices?
Well, good way is one, the Liberty Book Club. That's a great way to help people. Podcasts like yours and Sean's and those kind of discussions and just telling the truth, really. So, I mean, I think at the end of the day, truth will win. And just being consistent with your principles, being willing to talk to other people who may not see things the way you do. You know, having good books to share with people, like Anatomy of the State. That's a good short primer. Someone that's interested and has questions, like, okay, yeah, I see what you want. I want to learn more about this kind of libertarian stuff. Or, I can admit. Or maybe there's someone that can, like, that's like, oh yeah, I could admit that they lied about this, and this, but I still really believe, like, in government. And that's a good entry point. Okay, yeah, I have a, not to be sacrilegious, but, like, you know, growing up, like, oh, you give someone like some literature, right, about your, so it's like here's literature about, you know, so they can kind of really break it down for them. And I think this, like I said, like discussions like this, you know, like, which Sean does so much work with the Liberty Book Club, and being willing to, I know as libertarians, it's easy to, if someone like suggests like a solution that might involve, it's easy to kind of get wound up and be like, no, you know, like you're crazy. Like that's a terrible idea. Like, you know, and libertarians can be kind of get real fired up, and that's a good thing. But just being, knowing, accepting where someone, knowing where somebody's at, meeting them where they're at and having that discussion, conversation, and just being consistent and truthful and sharing an accurate account of things, whether it's history or current events or whatever. And I think in the long run, that'll be probably a good way to do things.
I love it. Sean, what do you think, man?
Well, let me start here. So, you know, when I finally figured out that everything I had learned in my entire life and was taught my entire life was a lie, whether it was politically or educational or whatever. You know, let me be the first one to say that's a really hard pill to swallow. And not a lot of people want to swallow that pill. They're not ready for it because it's like, okay, it's really demoralizing, honestly, because you're like, wow, everything I've learned my entire, like all of it is just a lie. But then I flipped it and reversed it. And I was like, okay, well, now we just have to run with this. Now that we know what it is, you need to get over yourself and everything that you were ever, you know, spoon-fed propaganda-wise, you need to just get over it and move on. It's all about moving on. And so, you know, I urge people to, if you feel in your heart, because that's where it started for me, if you feel in your heart and in your mind that something is not right, because that's how it started for me is I felt, oh my God, this isn't working. This is not okay. You know, inflation was through the roof and you know, gas prices had got up to over $4 a gallon, you know, back then. You know, we're not talking about right now. Like, you know, people were crazy about $5 a gallon gas, you know, over the, you know, not this past summer, but the summer before. Like, oh my God. Think about back then when the dollar, you know, everything was different back then. Like $4 a gallon gas was a huge deal. That was a big deal back then. You know, on top of the groceries and everything else. I mean, there's nothing new under the sun, as Zeal would say. Like, this is all a rerun. We are reliving 20 years ago, or not even at this point. Like, everything is happening again. They actually did destroy our generation, our mind anyways, with the endless war and the endless money printing. And as we tried to crawl our way out, they're trying to destroy your kids' generation now. It's so wild to see this in real time because I'm watching it and I know. I'm like, they're doing it to a T and nobody's saying a word about it. So unlearning everything you've learned is the first start, and accepting the fact that you were wrong in your beliefs is the first start. That is where you start. And then you open your mind and say, okay, well, maybe I should listen to, you know, Alex or Joel and be like, maybe I should read this or look this up or maybe look into this or that. That's where it starts. And then you take it from there. You know, you'll start reading books like, and the Fed right here. This actually opened the floodgates to a lot of different books for me because, you know, Ron Paul, you know, goes and says, okay, well, I got this information from this person, this person, this person. These are my receipts. Go read these. And Murray Rothbard's name actually comes up a lot in there. So I was like, okay, I need to read Rothbard, right? So then that's how it went from there. And then I read Rothbard, and then I was reading some Mises, and then I was reading some Spooner. Oh my God, you know? And then you read stuff like that, and Spooner will change your life. I could do a whole show on Spooner, honestly, because I revere him just about as much as I revere, you know, Ron Paul or Murray Rothbard, honestly. But you really just have to open your mind. It's all about keeping an open mind. And if you believe in your heart and in your soul and in your mind that things aren't right, they're not right. So you have to take it from there. Read the books. Get on podcasts, you know, anybody's podcast, whether it's yours or mine or the Cajun Libertarians or Shane Hazel's or, you know, Michael Malice, whoever it may be, they're giving good information. Go out there and get your information from independent media other than even Clint Russell. I love Clint Russell too. He's great too. But, you know, get your information from independent media rather than Fox and CNN. Or MSNBC, ABC, CBS, whoever it is, because they are literally government propaganda machines. Do you guys not know that your tax dollars help pay for your news that is spoon-fed to lie to you? Like if the news station is getting government subsidies, you should know that those are not what you want to be listening to, because if they are government subsidies, the government can tell them what can and cannot be said on TV. And they're getting their live feeds from FBI propaganda, CIA propaganda, anything that is government propaganda. And come on, guys, do you really trust the government? No, you don't. Especially if you're listening to this show or anybody's show on independent media, you don't trust them. You're out here searching for something different. You know, so that's my two cents on that.
Well, I think that's a beautiful place to end it, guys. This has been a great conversation. Before I let you go, I want you guys to have an opportunity to tell people where they can find you and follow you. So, Sean, go ahead. Where can people find your podcast and all your other stuff?
Man, I am Buds and Reality Podcast, and not Buds and. I'm Buds, letter N, Reality, like Guns and Roses. I kind of stole it from there. And, you know, I'm on Spotify, Rumble, YouTube, Apple, Google, Amazon, iHeartRadio. You can find my shows there. You can find me on X at Buds and Reality. Same thing with Twitter and same thing with Instagram and Facebook.
All right, Joel, how about you?
Just on Twitter at _infinitezeal. Daily memes. If you want some good anti-war. Making fun of the war pigs, Nikki Haley memes. That's you come over.
Lindsey Graham too. Come on, man.
And Lindsey Graham. And Lindsey Graham. All of them. Nobody's safe. Eyepatch McCain is next. That's what we're going to be doing every day.
You guys are two of my favorite Twitter followers. I love having you on the show today. Thank you guys so much for coming on.
I appreciate it, Alex. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Protestant Libertarian Podcast. If you have any questions or comments, please reach out to me at theprotestantlibertarian@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter. You can follow me at the handle @ProLibertyPod. Again, that is @ProLibertyPod. And you can also visit me at theprotestantlibertarianpodcast.com. At theprotestantlibertarianpodcast.com, you can also support the Christians for Liberty Network and the Libertarian Christian Institute. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, and we will see you next Tuesday.